Hello and welcome to What's So Funny, the show about the making of comedy. I'm your host, Levi Weinhagen. I am a theater writer and comedy maker in the Twin Cities. You can hit me on Twitter at BatLevi. This conversation is with Lauren Anderson. She's a sketch comedy writer and performer. She's been with the Brave New Workshop Comedy Theater for a decade now. I really enjoyed talking to Lauren about her writing process and what comedy and sketch means to her. The show is produced by mnartists.org, so you should go to mnartists.org to listen to previous episodes of the show and to check out artist profile to read about arts going on in the Twin Cities and in Minnesota and the world. So I hope you'll spend some time poking around there. And if you want to rate or review the show, we would love that. You can go to iTunes and rate and review it there. It really helps people learn about the show and lets us know what you think. So without any more chatter, here is my conversation with Lauren. All right, well, Lauren Anderson.
Yay!
Oh. I love that you can cheer yourself.
Woo! You have to. Otherwise, how else is anybody else going to?
That's true. Thanks for talking to me.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I think of you as a sketch writer, performer, and an improviser.
Yes.
Is that your main...
Correct.
Your main deal?
Yeah.
I mean, you are also a three-dimensional person.
Yeah. I exist outside of paper.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that's... I mean, that's my whole job. So that is... That's what I do, and...
And you've been doing, I mean, you've been writing sketch as your job for
this fall will be my 10 years.
Man.
10 years, man.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. It is awesome. It's weird to think about, like, how much you change in that time. Because, like, you're in your body and you're with yourself every single day, whether you like it or not. And some days you like it, and most days you probably don't. And, like, I mean, let's be honest. And then, like, I think about the sketches I used to write when I, back before I knew how to write a sketch, and the sketches I write now, and it is weird to think about, like, the growth in all areas, or how you change, and how you become more or less vulnerable, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's weird.
Yeah, well, so I'm curious about that. I was listening to stand-up comic talking about early work, and it made me want to ask you... Have you ever think, I wish I could take the confidence and skill you have now of writing and take some of the old premises that you had.
Yes,
as your first, you know, like, because your brain is just full of premises and you don't know what to do with them 10 years ago.
Oh, yeah. I mean, sometimes it's fun to go back. I've been lucky and fortunate enough to, like, work with the same company for a long time. So sometimes we'll have reoccurring themes, like... We'll do a political show, or we'll do a love show, or we'll do, an election show. Mm. And if I have a more broader concept piece that didn't make it in the previous show, sometimes I'll bring it back and, like, rewrite. And the current show is a current events show, and a lot of stuff with, like, women has been in the media a lot lately, and like, women's rights and all that stuff. And I wrote this sketch... A long time ago. I want to say like 2006. No, maybe it was like 2010. I guess that wasn't that long.
No, years.
Years ago. I read this article in Time Magazine about Nancy Pelosi. And Time Magazine had this huge, like, in-depth article. And it's Time Magazine, right? Mm. And like two quarters of the way into the article. Is that right? Two quarters? That's a half.
Yeah.
That's two quarters is a half.
Yeah.
For the record.
Your math checks out.
Thank you. And they start talking about Nancy Pelosi's, where she gets her hair cut, where she, what her style influence is, what her workout regime is, because she was an older woman. Mm. And I'm like, can I swear in this?
Sure, yeah.
You motherfuckers. That's what I thought. You motherfuckers. Like, you would never, ever do that. To a male politician. I mean, she's third in line to the presidency.
Yeah.
And you're asking her about her workout regime? And yes, we do care if the president plays basketball. We do. As a society, we care about that.
Yeah, because that's awesome.
But that's not why they're asking Nancy Pelosi that.
No.
They're like, how do you look so young? How do you stay so vigorous?
Yeah.
You know? And they don't care about youth or vigor. Well, maybe they do in politics.
But that isn't what the...
why the press was asking.
Yeah, so long story long, it pissed me off. Yeah. And I was like, this is stupid. This is so dumb. So I wrote the sketch about Nancy Pelosi, who I'm a fan of, love her, hate her. She's done some cool stuff. So I wrote this whole sketch, and it just didn't work for the current show. And it's like in its like seventh iteration, and I keep changing it. So I switched it from Nancy Pelosi to a female executive, and then I switched it from a reporter to an intern, and then I just kept switching the premise. And right now I brought it back for the most current show coming up, and it's in the previews at least.
Yeah, you don't know yet because
fingers crossed. But you know, sometimes you have this idea and it sticks with you, and then the audience isn't ready for it yet. Mm. Like, there's some sketches that I wrote that I think would go over, like, gangbusters now. But when I first wrote them, people were like, what? What am I watching? And I think a lot of artists, like, all across all mediums deal with that stuff. They're like, you are, because you do it every day, you are already past, you're already more invested in past, like, what the general populace thinks is funny or thinks is interesting or thinks is palatable. You've already surpassed that. Like, comedians always have this reputation of having, like, really dark, twisted sense of humor. Because if you do comedy every day, the mundane or the popular chances are, won't make you laugh the same way that somebody who doesn't do comedy every day does. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Just like if you, you know, I don't know. If you, I imagine if you did taxes every day, and then you had this, like, great tax case where you're like, how did they...
Where it was so different.
Yeah, it was so different. Yeah. It, like, kind of jazzed you, and you're like, here we go. Let's do this. Oh, good. And then you get excited about this very strange tax.
Yeah, well, I've never seen this before.
Yeah.
Oh.
What are these numbers?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So I think it's that, you know, it's kind of universal. Well, now I don't know what I'm talking... What was your question?
No, you are. I wonder if you think about if there's a line you try to walk where you want to be out in front of an idea, like you want to get to a farther away idea, but you don't want to go so far that people can't come with you.
Yes.
Sounds like you're talking about. So you have to push people, but you have to know, like,
when to stop
if you go too far, and then just there.
Or you have to know how much to, like, reach out your hand and be like, "Come on, babies, come on, come with me. It's okay."
Well, and for sketch writing, there's the writing the sketch.
Yeah.
But then there's that specific sketch's relationship to the other pieces it's surrounded by.
Yeah.
That can support or take away from.
Yeah.
So it can do that reach out thing.
Oh, yeah. And even, like, the placement of a sketch in the show will change how the audience reacts to it.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, we typically, when we're planning a show, we typically, and you know this, you plan shows all the time, we kind of save our, like, raunchier stuff, our dirtier stuff, our more politically charged stuff for the second act, because we've had the whole first act for the audience to warm up to us, to get to like us, to, like, figure out what it is they're watching, and then we hit them with the hard stuff, you know what I mean? Because at that point, they're more forgiving. They're like, oh, I like her, so mm-hmm. I can
hear... They trust you, too.
Yeah, they trust you, so it's like, oh, you know, she was funny before, so I'm gonna sit through this really, really heavy satirical point. You know what I mean? And I'm gonna give her the benefit of the doubt.
This might be going somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And because I think in sketch, in more than any other comedy, well, no, that's not true. I think in all comedy, but in sketch especially, the audience really watches you, the person, mm-hmm. become different people. So they have to like you. And to some extent. And I feel that way about comedy in general. Like, you have comedians that really speak to you on some level. And you're more willing to laugh with them because you relate to them.
Hmm.
I think if you can't relate to a comedian, your chances are you're not going to laugh with them. And I always talk about this, too. You know, like, when you're trying to... When you have something that you want to communicate, it's not just like, hey, here's what I have to say. But it's like, are the people I'm trying to say to ready to hear it?
Hmm.
So you have to... Yeah, it is that fine dance of, like, I have all this that I want to say, and I want to make you laugh, and I want you to be able to be in the right headspace to hear it, you know? Like a good relationship. Like, they always say, don't fight before you go to sleep, because all your spouse chances are wants to is go to sleep. You know what I mean? So they're not going to be, like, with you. They're not going to be like, yes, honey, I understand. That makes perfect sense.
You wait until the morning, and then you get the fight going.
Yeah. You know, start the day off right.
I don't know if there's any one answer for you for this, but the starting of writing a sketch, do you find you will think of a funny joke and see, oh, I could build something around this? Or you think of a funny character, mm-hmm. or would you think of a scenic, like a setting? I mean, what do you have a common jumping off point? Or is it an idea? Like, I want to get at this politician who was asked about her clothes. How do I attack that from a sketch? So, without just recreating a politician being asked about her clothes?
That's a good question. For me, it's all of the above. I do it depending on, you know what I mean? Because, like, I was at my sister's graduation, and she was, like, her girlfriend was graduating, and I was driving back from graduation to this barbecue she was hosting for her girlfriend. And she was like, we got to get home, because she bought Rob Rots. And she's like, and I got to cook the Rob Rots. And she's like, I can't believe she bought Rob Rots. I mean, who brought the Rob Rots? And I was like, what? Stop saying Rob Rots. And then stop saying, brought the Rob Rots. So it's like, and that one thing made me laugh really hard. And it's just the way, it's just the brought the Rob Rots. You know, it's just like the sound of it made me laugh.
There's a musicality to that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so I brought it to the group, and I was like, you know, this is a hilarious thing that happened, I think. And there's no real sketch other than somebody being frantic over Rob Rots and then the sound of it. So then you build a sketch from there. Or I'll have, like, big concepts. Like, I think it's important right now that we talk about women's issues because it's so prevalent in the media. Or at least it's been prevalent in my media.
Because you're a woman.
Because I'm a woman. Oh. Just kidding. I've never done that in my life.
No, but it was magical.
Thanks. And
woman, where do you get your clothes?
No, don't say that. I was thinking about that on the ride over. I was like, Levi's cool. He won't ask me that stupid question of what it's like to be a female in comedy. No offense, all other reporters everywhere.
It's funny, actually. That did not occur to me. But,
thank you.
But now that you
say it, hallelujah. No.
My take on that conversation topic is that's the same thing to me as what's it like to grow up in Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know because that's the only place I ever grew up.
Exactly.
Like, how do you know what it's like to write as a woman? I haven't not been one, unless you went through like a transgender transformation in the middle of your writing career, then you could be like, well, when I was writing as a man, it was this way, and now it's this way.
Thank you for thinking, because that's my standard answer. I always, like, whenever I'm asked that, I get what people mean. They're like, what's the climate like for women in comedy?
That's
what they're talking about. But they always ask it that way, and I'm always like, that's my standard answer. I'm always like, I don't know, because I've never been not a woman, so I don't have anything to compare it to.
Have you thought about, like, full costume and makeup trying to become a man and then do a what is that Eddie Murphy sketch with a white like me? He gets made up like a white person and he goes through his day and it's like a secret society, like the bankers are just offering him money and stuff because he's a white guy.
That's awesome.
So maybe you could make that
happen. Yeah, we'll see.
No,
my new answer is I feel like that's it's a strange question to ask because it implies that the only true comedian or the only true sketch writer is a white male.
Mm-hmm. That's our neutral.
Yeah, that's neutral. In society. And everything else is a subsect. Like, you're a female sketch writer, you're a black sketch writer, you're a lesbian sketch writer, you're whatever. It's all subsects of, like, what the norm is. And I feel like we should find a different way to ask that question. Like, if you want to know what it's like to be me, I can tell you. But it's just an old question, too. It's like, ugh, come on. Although, luckily, I haven't been asked it in a while, so.
Well, you kind of forced it on me.
I know, I forced it. Like, now we're talking about it, and I was like, I didn't want to talk about it.
Yeah, I'm not taking any responsibility for
No,
that.
You shouldn't.
Because I mean,
you would never ask, which is cool.
Not in that way. I mean, I am curious for you if you are aware of your sort of... You, I'm sure, get the opportunity to be a mentor comedically to people.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you can be a leader for other women in comedy who are younger coming up in the Twin Cities because they see this. I mean, you...
Surprisingly, the people who ask for my menteeship the most are men, though.
Yeah.
They're always like, hey, can I pick your ear about this and that and the other thing? More so than women, which is interesting.
But then is that a commentary on the fact that fewer women think that they can chase after being a professional sketch comedy performer and writer? See what happens there.
I don't know. I never thought about
you know,
that.
There is that big idea that even in classroom settings, boys are more likely to answer questions and raise their hand and talk in class than girls. I wonder if that's even still reflected on people approaching you, like, oh, I don't want to bother one. I have no idea if that's true, but like I.
Yeah, you know what? I don't know because like a majority of my classes, when I first started teaching improv, it was like. Like, say there were 12 people in the class, it'd be 10 males, 2 women.
Mm-hmm.
And now it is 50-50, or it is, like, 60-40.
Interesting.
Like, there'll be, like, 4 dudes and, like, 8. That took me a while. 8 women. what was that, 12? Yeah.
You're not the accountant that Jesus. You used in the example earlier.
Every tax issue would be a unique thing. What are these numbers?
Well, I think there has been progress made in the sort of green lighting of...
Yeah.
I mean, just our local improv scene, there didn't used to be whole groups of just women, and that seems very common now.
Or, you know, maybe it's because I will get women who do comedy come up to me and they say, every time I watch you or every time I take a class from you, I'm like learning. I just humble brag myself.
Just make it a straight up brag.
Yeah, man. Yeah. They're like, every time I see you or watch you or in class with you, I'm learning something from you.
Mm.
And so maybe men are more.
They have to ask you because they're not learning immediately.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Who knows?
I don't know. I
have no idea.
We can move off the...
Yeah.
We can get off women.
Good. Okay, good.
Let's get off women.
Get off of us.
I mean, it's really important to me, so I can obviously talk to you about that stuff, but not because you're a woman, just because like,
it's like a sub-podcast.
I want it to change. Yeah, I don't want to do the Women in Comedy podcast. Because... go ahead. Probably get a lot of comments on the internet from jerks.
Yeah.
But,
so many jerkos.
But one of the things I'm curious about for you, because you are you're a writer-performer.
Yeah.
Which, in stand-up, that's what they are. But it's a whole different thing, because you're writing for yourself, but you're also writing for other people at the same time.
Yeah.
And I know, for me, sketch writing... I mean, you even mentioned it in that Rob Rotch thing. You need to hear a thing aloud.
Yeah.
So are you saying all the lines as you're when you write them?
Oh, right? Yeah. For
and acting
sure.
Out the characters? Yeah.
I had a roommate once, and I write at night. I'm like, I think I have those like whimsical dreams of like what writers do, and they like smoke cigarettes and they write at 3 a.m. And I'm like a night owl anyway, and my life kind of affords me that. So
you work late.
Yeah, I work late, so I like to write at night because I hate going to bed. Once I'm asleep, I'll sleep forever. But like. But, like, I hate the idea of going to bed. I always feel like I'm missing something. So I like to write in, like, the witching hour, you know, when it's, like, quiet and you can go outside and it's, like, that just, it's, like, the only, you know, I live right in the city and it's the only time that the city's a little bit quiet, you know, and it's, like, it's great. It's just, like, oh, okay. It's, like, the world doesn't want me to do anything else but write. So clickety click, 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 you know. And one time I was writing the sketch, and I was making myself laugh, and I was like doing the voices and like mumbling to myself, and I had headphones on, and my roommate comes out of his room, and it's like 3:45 in the morning, and he's like, "Hey, crazy, can you shut the fuck up?" And I was like, "Oh, sorry. Oh, I'm sorry about that."
You didn't say, "I'm making art in here."
No way, dude, because I can only imagine. Because, like, I had headphones on, so I was, like, probably, like, mumbling and then laughing and then talking out loud and not realizing how loud I was talking. Oh, stupid.
Well, there's a kind of madness to that, too.
There is madness to it. And that brings up another question. Like, we were talking about, like, thing that I'm noticing as I get older, and now that I have a lot of experience.
How do you stay so young, Seymour?
Well, I can't help it. I really want to do it. No. But it's now you have craft. Now you have skill. Before, you just had passion and, like, time and, like, the drive for it. Mm-hmm. But now that you have experience as you get older, you can kind of, like, hone in your craft, like, rely on your craft a little bit. Mm. And
you have more tools.
More tools. Thank you. That's the word. That tiny word is the word I was looking for. Tools. Yes, tools. Woo! You have tools. So now I can be like, if my director needs, he's like, you know what's missing is this thing on Benghazi or whatever. I'll be like, okay, I'll try it. And I'll snatch that idea and be like, what about Benghazi? And then I'll be like, tick, 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 tick. And I'll do it between the hours of 2 and 5 p.m. You know what I mean?
P.m. or a.m.?
Or p.m. Oh, afternoon. Yeah. Like, yeah. Let's not go crazy. You know, but when I'm feeling, like, wild or inspired, I still like to write at night. Mm. But now that I'm older, I can't. I used to not be able to write during the day at all. Mm. Now I can write during the day, and I can write on subjects that are needed as opposed to just the subjects that excite me. Because I feel like I have enough craft there that I can be like, yep, I'll try it. I'm not saying it's going to be brilliant or even inspired, but it will be funny.
But you've gotten past the stage of waiting for the muse to strike you. And now it's, now I need something, so I need to make something happen.
Yeah, yeah. Because and I actually love that feeling. I love the feeling that, like, this is a job. I like feeling like you're the Jason Bourne of something. You know what I mean? Like you've been, like, I have been, you know, I've had the...
I can write flat out for an hour before getting winded.
All right. you know, like, you can do something enough that you know that you can do it, and that you can produce, and then you can produce when it's asked of you. I think that's, like, a cool feeling. And it's not just like, oh, I don't know. I mean, it's not to say I never get writer's block or anything like that, because that happens. Or I'll be like, this sketch is bullshit. But here we go.
Well, I'm curious about that bullshit piece, because the other thing that's been, I would guess, happening for you over the years is your good versus bad meter changes, where your expectation levels go up. You have a thicker skin. You've seen more. You've done more. You know what you're capable of.
Yeah.
So then you know when you're falling short of that.
Yeah.
So are you able to keep that in check and not get in the way of you making stuff still happen? Or is that sort of the opposite? You know, with experience also comes this new barrier of, this isn't good enough. I mean, that can be great. It can push you to keep writing at a thing and going deeper on a sketch idea rather than, you know, your second idea into the sketch might not be as strong as the 10th pass at the idea.
Hmm.
But can you never, like, it's never done because you know it could be better?
Yeah. Maybe. Sometimes we'll be performing a sketch and we'll be like 2 months in and I'll be like, oh, I should have.
You just figured out the sketch.
Yeah. Oh, that's how it should be done. Yeah. I definitely think that... Wait, what was your question?
Well, do you... your awareness that you're capable. You have these new tools and you know about these tools now. Does that raise the expectations of yourself become an obstacle for actually being productive?
Yes. Yes and no. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because you have that thicker skin that you mentioned, you're able to remove yourself from it. Like, some of the best advice I ever got was from my college professor about auditioning. And he said, go audition, deliver the best you can, and then go have a beer and forget about it. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, right. You know what I mean? Like, so when you're young, it's everything or nothing, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And what nobody tells you when you get older is you're like, oh yeah, that is what you should do. Mm. Because you've done your work, you've done the best you can do, and at some point you have to let it go. And that is something I'm learning more than any other lesson is the art of letting go. Because I used to, like, hold so tight and everything was so important and everything was life or death. And, like, oh, if nobody laughs at the sketch, I'll just melt into a puddle and die. And I'll... And now I'm more... It's not like it doesn't suck, though. Like,
yeah.
If, but now if my castmates or if my director doesn't laugh at a sketch, then I will be like, oh, that's not funny. Or sometimes...
You're not mad at that.
Yeah. Sometimes if I love the premise, I'll be like, oh, it needs more comedy. Mm. It needs more jokes, you know? The premise is solid.
You're not doing it justice.
But it needs more jokes. Yeah. Like, I got to take another crack at it, so... And we call at the workshop, we call it like killing your baby kind of thing. Because like you can get really attached to your work and like, no, I want it said this way and I want it done like this and I want you to pause right here. And at some point you have to like let go of that because that's, you know, you can do it that way maybe because that's what you had in your brain. Mm-hmm. But nobody else is going to be able to do it the way you envision it. So at some point you have to like... let it go and see what happens. But yes, I am stricter with myself, but at the same time, I kind of enjoy what a first draft is. You know what I mean? A first draft is truly a first draft. Hmm. Before, my first drafts were like seventh drafts. You know what I mean? Like they had to be. And so now I'm like, oh yeah, I'm bring that back to the table. Or like, you know, I thought I liked that, but it's just not working. I'm going to do something else. Or yeah. I'm going to focus on another sketch I like more. Did that answer your question?
Yeah, that was great.
Okay, good. No, it's like talking in a circle.
Well, the sketch performing and also writing is collaborative.
Very.
Way
at
more
least
than
where
like
I
stand-up.
Work.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what it... I think it has to be good, but
yeah.
That's my bias.
Yeah.
But that's also a learned skill.
Yes, it is.
Because there
is.
There's the fighting for your own ideas thing. Mm-hmm. I know for me, initially, I had a hard time punching up somebody else's sketch because I didn't immediately know that was what I was, that was good to do. I was like, oh, I don't want to tell them that this isn't right. Like, you have to be taught to,
because
you're not only writing your sketches, you're also adding jokes and stripping away things that don't work from other people's stuff.
Or you'll be like, I love this element. I think this element's stronger than this element.
Yeah.
You know?
Do you feel like you had to learn how to rewrite other people's sketches and did that inform how you write?
I think you have to learn to allow yourself to the table.
Hmm.
Like, you have to learn to give yourself permission to be there. Like, they hired you, whatever group you're working with, they, at some point, even if it's like a non-paid thing, they've asked you to collaborate with them, or maybe you've asked them to collaborate with you, but like, you belong at the table, and when you're at the table, you gotta show up to the table, you know? And I think I think most people are in their own way. In fact, I think everybody's in their own way, in some, I think we're our own biggest, like, obstacle most of the time, and, so once you're there, I think there's a good and a bad way to give critique or to give suggestion. But I do think the biggest obstacle for a lot of people is to be like, oh, no, they've asked me there. And I'm going to offer my opinion because that's what I'm here to do. That's kind of my job, you know? Oh, that's my phone. Dumb. What was I saying? Something really...
Just that you belong there. The idea that I think... sort of what you're touching on is, I think a lot of creative people, not just in the comedy world, broadly, have a feeling of, I might be a fraud.
Yes!
I've tricked everyone, right? They're going to find me out. And you have to get over that in order to, but I don't know if you ever get all the way over it.
No, you don't, prevail, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You carry on. We always say in our, like, improv workshops, we talk about, you know, like, improvisers aren't magically comfortable all of a sudden, like, with, like, whatever, man. Like, hell no, that's not the case. But what happens with the training of improv and, like, the tenets of improv is the more you do them, the more you are comfortable being uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the same goes for, like, critique. Like, it's never easy to offer critique. It's never easy to give feedback or to give like, hey, you should try this joke. But you do it and you keep doing it and you try it and you keep trying it.
It's easy, you might be a dick.
Right. Or you might not be like valuing somebody else's art enough, or you might be in the wrong headspace, because when it comes down to it, it is art, you know. It's, I think, anyway. I got into a huge slump once. It was big, and it was like shaking me to the core. I was like, that idea of fraud. I was like, I am a fucking sham. What the hell am I doing? I can't get up in front of these people and make comedy. Like, who the fuck do I think I am? Like, seriously, I gotta go home and I gotta go to bed. You know what I mean? Like, this is dumb. And I was psyching myself out of it, basically. Totally. And my roommate offered me some fantastic advice. The same roommate that told me to shut the fuck up because I was talking too loud. He was like, are you okay? And I was like, yeah. And then I told him, and he said, you know, you could just quit. And I was like, what? And he's like, you need to just say fuck it and quit and walk out and never do it again. And I was like, no. And then I was like, yes. Yes, I could. I mean, you can, right? You can at any point. And just the idea, like, I could, if something's not going right or well, I could literally give two birds to the audience or to my bosses or to whoever and say, fuck it, fuck off, fuck you, I'm out. Mm-hmm. And then leave and then never do it again. I could do that.
Yeah.
And
be an amazing story.
What a story, right?
And then one day she just, fuck it, I'm out. Like, no one's seen her since.
I heard she makes pots now in Santa Fe. But just him giving me that out, or like him giving me like, you know, you could quit. Mm-hmm. I was like, I could do that. And that reminded me, in that moment, it reminded me that I do it for the love of it. I do it because I have to do it. I do it because I need it. I don't have to do it because I'm being forced. I have to do it because it's like, it's inside me and I want that. I feel like it's my thing. Like, I feel like I have to share that. I have to keep sharing that with the world. And for him to be like, you could quit. I was like, oh, I don't want to quit. That's the last thing I want to do. No, right. I love this. I want to do this. I love making people laugh. I love writing. I love performing. Oh my God. And then in that moment, my slump ended. I like went out and did the best set ever that night. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it was, isn't that strange? Like, and there's that permission piece too. Like in that instance, he kind of gave me permission to quit. He's like, you could do it. He suggested it to me. But I feel like, the coolest thing is when you can do it for yourself. So when you give yourself permission to speak your mind, give yourself permission to be in the room, to say what you want to say, to believe in yourself, to applaud yourself or cheer for yourself. Woohoo!
Well, right? I love that idea of it's really about being uncomfortable or being unsure and keeping moving. Mm-hmm. Like, that is what you learn over time, you don't get away from the uncertainty of your abilities. Mm-hmm. It's that you go, I have to just keep going even though I feel this.
Yeah.
Because you just have to. Like, there's no other... There is an option of walking away, but your brain's never going to stop doing it the way it does it, and your body still wants to do those things.
Yeah,
that feels really powerful.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you have a certain comedic sensibility? Like, do you see a through line in your writing? I mean, you do a lot of different things, and you inhabit a lot of different characters on stage. I mean, you can be wildly physical. But then you can really ground a character too, which.
Oh, thank you, Leila.
turned into a compliment. It was unintentional.
You meant it as a question.
I meant it.
Well, there is well the compliment in there.
So I know, like, you gave the Benghazi example that this is what we need, I can do this.
Yeah.
But you...
Is Benghazi, like, my go-to hilarious thing? It's... No, it's not.
When did you realize you were mostly focused on Benghazi stuff?
A lot of my stuff is, like, Benghazi-related.
Even when I don't say Benghazi, it's in there.
I love to personify. I think if that's, like, a thing... I love to do it just, like, in my brain. It's kind of psychotic, maybe, but... When that meteor hit Siberia, this was a while ago, but when the meteor hit Siberia, I personified Siberia and then all the surrounding countries of whether or not they were going to help Siberia out. And that's the way I was like, hey, how do we talk about this meteor that happened across the world in a place that most people are scared of, you know what I mean? So I personified the countries and gave them, like, human elements, you know?
Yeah.
And I thought, well, just that alone is funny. Like, I want to see what Siberia's like as a person, you know? So I do that a lot. I used to do animals a lot, but I don't do that anymore. I used to do, like, some magical elements. When I write for myself, I like to write myself as, like, rulers and queens. And if I can give myself minions, I will.
Uh-huh. You just like to have someone you're in charge of?
Yeah, unfortunately. And it's funny, too, because it's not like I'm not like that in my real life. I'm not like, hey, bitches, fall in line, you know?
Right, right.
But I like playing those characters. I like playing, like, I also like playing the innocent a lot. Like the SpongeBob character, you know, the quintessential, like, full of love, full of life, full of innocence.
Yeah, sort of not... broken down by the world.
Yeah.
Like that character. So I'm curious with both of those.
Yeah.
I'll try not to do too much pop psychology, but the status of sort of leader, queen, and then also the, like, pure of heart.
Yeah.
And naive, but in a charming way.
Yeah.
Do you feel like there's an element of, like, your purest self that you distill? Like, this is a part of myself that I love, and so it's fun to be able to get into that on stage, even though you know you can't be that thing out in the real world. Like, you have to be, I don't know, you have to have some defenses to get by in the world. And you also can't be, like, the queen of shit town always.
No.
Because you'll just lose everyone around
you. Right.
But, like, do you feel like there's elements of, like, this is a part of me that actually makes me really happy and I can live it on stage. Like, do you get to...
Yeah, because, I mean, to be honest, like if we're going to get real psychological here, like, I am attracted to power. I think it's an attractive quality in people.
Well, you're on stage making everyone listen to you talk.
Yeah.
All the people doing that...
are attracted to power.
There's an element of, you know,
I like
something.
I like powerful minds. I like powerful people. I think, there's a quote I like from one of my favorite books that's like, she expanded in a way that good people do when they're being great. That's that, like, you don't make your body big, but you know, when people are doing what they're supposed to do, whether it's lead a nation or do somebody's taxes. Oh, that tax guy, I want to meet him so bad. Or her. But when you expand, you get big and you're like, do your thing. It's really cool to watch. It's my favorite thing to watch, actually. So I think there's an elephant.
You love elephants.
We love elephants for the record. Or I love elephants.
Can't believe it took you this long to mention elephants. You just shoehorned it in.
Just get it in there. But I do think that it is an attractive quality, and it's a quality I like to portray. Mm-hmm. It's like what a good leader does or what a powerful leader does or even what a bad leader does. It's fun. And then that innocent quality is, I don't have a mean sense of humor at all.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't like to make fun of people.
You're not a big fan of hurt.
No. I think, not even, self-deprecating. I can do self-deprecating and I can think self-deprecating is hilarious to a point. And then I feel bad because I was like, oh, you can't even, you know, when people are too self-deprecating, I was like, you know, at some point I'm like, oh, come on, don't talk about my friend that way. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like, who is that a thing? Or do you really feel that way about yourself? Mm-hmm. Like, my comedian kind of stops, and my, like, person who cares about you starts, and I'm like, oh, God, are you going to go home and hurt yourself? You know what I mean? Like, you know what I mean?
Because you know about the truth element of it.
Yeah, there's so much truth in your comedy. So if somebody is just hating on themselves night after night, and it is their comedy, and it's a way to, like, show their true self, I think that's really cool and a powerful thing to do. But if it's too hurtful, yikes, you know, you worry. You worry about the human, not just the performer. But yeah, that's interesting. I never even thought about it like that. Like, all the two things I like to play the most are... My favorite thing to play, and this might be even more telling, is the unbelievably arrogant idiot.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I love playing an arrogant idiot. As somebody who's like bombastically thinks they're right and they couldn't be more wrong. And whether it's like Amelia Bedelia style, like they just like take everything too literally and they don't get it, but they're like sure of themselves about it. Hmm. That's like my favorite character.
It's funny because it's kind of a marriage of the two.
Yeah.
It's a leader, but then someone who has no real world experience. Mm-hmm. So they're like, I know everything, but I don't know anything at all.
Or someone who's like, I like wordplay a lot too. Mm. One of my favorite sketches that never got into a show was I was staying at a hotel and I was walking by the hotel gym.
Mm-hmm.
And it said supervision required. And I was like, supervision? What do they mean? Like, you have to have 20/20 vision. And I just read it wrong. You know what I mean? It's like one of those instances. But it stopped me in my tracks. It was like, what? I was like, what does that mean? Like, do you have to have better than no glasses? And I was like, supervision. Oh, you got to be there with your kids. But I wrote a whole... whole sketch about it. And it seemed, I happened to me with, I was like with a boyfriend way back, like in high school. And we were like kissing on the couch, but the TV was on. And Frasier was playing this thing called, they were talking about Rock Aikido. And they kept saying Rock Aikido like that. And we were like kissing and stuff. And I was like, and at some point I just kept hearing this word. And I was like, what the hell is Rock Aikido? And my boyfriend was like, raw cookie dough, Lauren. And I was like, ah. So I'm thinking it's like a magic fish. I didn't know. So, like, those kind of things really get me. I think those things are funny. So wordplay is a big one for me.
Yeah. Well, I love misunderstandings.
Me too.
The fact that you're comfortable enough to say, here's a thing I didn't understand. That was very straightforward. Like,
I almost feel like that gives you more power, though. You know what I mean? Like, I love words. And anytime I don't know what a word is, I will always ask. And I don't care if I'm talking to, like, the mayor of the town or, like, my best friend.
The mayor of the town.
You know, whatever town I'm in. I like to meet the mayor.
Yeah, you always meet the mayor.
You gotta, like, get comfortable with the town.
Yeah. Excuse me, where's your mayor?
I must meet him / her. So...
But you will ask.
I will always ask. And people always, like, tell you. And then you have a new word. You know what I mean?
True.
And it's great. It's great that way. Like, I just learned a really great word.
Rock-a-keto?
No, that's an oldie. But don't you want Rock-a-keto to be a magic fish?
Kind of, although it sounds like a martial art. Rock-a-keto.
Oh, yeah.
That's where I went immediately, so I don't know what that is about me.
Interesting.
Like a rock opera, but with Aikido thrown in. That's what I pictured. Just a lot of martial arts moves while singing. Which I'd like to see. While eating cookie dough.
Awesome. Subsume. That's the word.
What does it mean?
Subsume means to take an idea, a part of an idea, and implement it into a bigger idea.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So you can't subsume people. But you can subsume an idea. So I could take like an element of Judaism and subsume it into Christianity.
I believe that's happened.
Yeah. I mean, come on. But I couldn't take, like, you and subsume you into my group.
Right.
And I was like, well, what's the difference between consume? And if you consume something, it's gone.
It disappears. But subsume, it still exists.
Subsume, it's just like...
It's changed its context.
It's just come on in. But isn't it fun to say?
It is.
Subsume. And it kind of sounds like a Susian instrument. You know what I mean?
Yes. All right. Well, we've been talking for a long time.
Okay.
This is awesome.
Thank you.
I really appreciate it.
Yeah, it was fun.
Where do... I mean, you're often at the Brave New Workshop. People can come see you there.
Yes. That's my full-time job, so...
And yeah. Then, are you on the Twitters?
I am on the Twitters. I'm at Lauren Anderhan.
Lauren Anderhan.
Yeah.
Yeah. So people can follow you on that.
Yeah. It's Twitter, like Anderson, but with hand in there.
Instead of son.
Yeah. I had a hiccup, but I saw
hand. Part of it. Part of it. Well, thanks a lot for your time.
Thank you. Go comedy.